You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is A's Cast Live. Your comprehensive look at the Oakland Athletics.
Drive to deep center field. Going back, Hernandez at the track, right to the wall. Gone! Elvis Andrus!
And 29 other MLB clubs.
High drive, deep left field. Nino left the building.
Guerrero lifts one to left field and gone!
Ohtani, that was a moonshot out there in the right center.
Alonso defends his title. The 2021 Derby Champion.
Join us as we take you inside the baseball universe from OPS Plus to juiced balls to game-changing moments. We have you covered. Spend your afternoon with us next from the town, only on A's Cast Live. Here's Chris Townsend.
Well, here on A's Cast Live from the field, we're going to start with an interview for you of someone who I know a lot of you A's fans, you loved him here as an Oakland A. And one of the things that you think about with my job all these years is getting to see players, whether they stay with us or not, you get to see them mature as professional athletes. You see them grow as people. You see him come out of a college like Vanderbilt, and next thing you know, show up, you're pitching playoff games, and then obviously it was sad to see you go, but he's now back with us, and we love having Sonny Gray on the program. My friend, it's been a while. How are you?
It has been. I'm good. Like I said, life is good. It feels really good to be back here. I think this is maybe my third time back, but this time it feels good. It always feels good to come back here. The ride into the field, everything. It just feels nice. So I'm good. I'm doing very well.
Everybody always says it's just comfortable. It feels like home.
Well, you hear it. You go to other teams. So when you're here, you don't know any better. You're just kind of like here, and this is what it is. Especially when you, like for me coming up here, and it was like make your debut as rookie here, doing all the things here in Oakland. It was like, this was it. And then you go other places and they're like, oh, you like Oakland? I was like, I loved it because everyone's like, oh, yeah. And I'm like, I don't know, there's just something about that place that's just awesome. So yeah, it does. It's always nice to come back. There's a lot of history. It's very unique place, and it's got a special part for me.
Yeah, people don't understand because they look at all the issues that we have with the ballpark and everything, but the era that you were here. And when you think of Bob Melvin, you think of all the guys you competed with at such a high level and the playoff games and the packed crowds, there was something special about that era. It's always hard to put your finger on exactly just one thing, but for you guys that were so close, it was a magical time.
Yeah, the walk-off wins. I mean, so many times there were walk-offs hit and walk-off wins happening here. And it was a lot of fun. I came up in that. I think 12 was going to the playoffs, and then I came up and jumped right in the middle of it in 13, and then did it again in 14. And it was kind of like those years, 12, 13, and 14, just kind of being in the middle of it and being here and coming up in that spot was a really fun time here. That's for sure. We had a lot of fun. And like I said, the fans were – there were a lot of packed games. I remember the playoff games, and it's just you look around at this place and look at all the seats, and it was just I was trying to tell some guys over there. I was like, "Hey, when this place gets going, there's not a place like it."
It was like a football game. It was like the NFL and the Raiders during those games. And I remember doing my talk show outside the stadium because we weren't allowed in because ESPN and other people had the right. So even though we're here all year long, we got kicked to the curb outside for the playoffs.
Crazy how that happened.
And everybody was like, well, how do you feel about Sonny Gray starting? And you're like, hey, stuff plays. I don't care how young he is. And you know who we just had on the show is Jim Leland.
Okay.
And talking about Tigers, A's, mm-hmm. Verlander, Cabrera, and of course just saw Cabrera, and thinking about you pitching against them brings back all these memories. And for them, they remember that this was the loudest stadium they'd ever been in.
I believe it because I remember what we had game one, two, and then game five here. Yeah, it was this place gets rolling. It's a special place, and you get all these fans on top of you. It was a very, very special place, and I'm sure it still has its moments still. But I vividly remember those and things I'll remember forever.
So you know, once you're an A, you're always an A, and we're always gonna root for you no matter where you go. And I think about when you made the comeback and came off the IL. We're rooting for you to pitch well. How you feeling now? Where are you right now?
Yeah, I feel good. I as everyone did, I had a little bit of a slower start. The spring was kind of – it was different for a lot of reasons. And, I coming out of spring, I felt okay. And then I went on the IL for a little while, and then I just started – I guess two starts ago against the A's in Minnesota, and I've made one more start after that, and then I'll throw tomorrow. So the way I see it, it's kind of like my third start of the year. I don't really count the first two, kind of like laboring through some things. So I feel good. I feel good. It's just now I'm just building, trying to build some momentum, create some consistency on the mound, and just kind of continue to get my feet under me and continue to just get into the flow of the season and keep kind of moving forward. So I feel good. I feel good. And, I like it in Minnesota. It's a really, really good group of guys. It's been fun getting to know all of these guys that are over there currently. It's a bunch of new faces that came over to the team. So, it's good. I really like the spot that I'm in.
Killer ballpark, good team, good situation, first place. Mm-hmm. I love it for you. And I think about, like, with Stephen Vogt always used to talk about catching you was like, I don't know where it's going. Sometimes I don't think he knows where it's going because it's that magic that you have, that natural movement, and it can change throughout the game for you, and you can move the ball around. I know we've had many of conversations about that. So I can see a guy like you. You don't have much of a spring training. I can see where it may take a little bit of time because you got a lot going on when you're out on the mound.
Yeah, there's a lot of feels that I feel when I'm out there, and a lot of like manipulation and a lot of like getting on the same page with this person, because sometimes I'll just do something different with the ball, and I kind of need you to know that that's about to happen. I got to see Vody yesterday, which was really cool. I gave him a big hug. He was out there in right field. So that was special. He's one of my all-time favorite human beings of all time, as probably a lot of guys, a lot of people. He's great. But yeah, you're right. I do some different stuff every now and then, and just see what happens.
I think about one of the strengths for this ball club is defense, and for you as a pitcher, what does that mean to you that kind of everywhere you look on the diamond, mm-hmm. you got a player out mm-hmm. there that can really help you out?
Yeah, that's kind of new for me over the last few years. It is honestly, too, and this can be like cliche, and you can hear people say this, but they put in a lot of time and a lot of effort in defense. Like they're constantly working on it, they're constantly talking about it. It's something that's not just like taken for granted. It's not just like, hey, you just go out here and do this. They take a lot of effort and a lot of thought, and you can tell they care about it. The defensive guys and this team in general, like, really care about it, which is nice. And it's nice as a pitcher to know that, hey, these guys putting the time, putting the effort. It genuinely matters to them. So that makes you feel comfortable and happy, and it makes you want to run and reciprocate and do the same. So it's a nice way to have all aspects and all part of the game kind of flowing together.
I'm not sure where Correa is from a standpoint of Rein Stadium. I know it's either going to be today or tomorrow, whatever it's going to be. But we do know this, having played against him for so long and what he's done in the postseason. He's one of those guys, he's the dude. Like, he's legit. Mm-hmm. Like, and like, even through the scandal, after the scandal, he's like, you know, he's the guy that flipped you the bird, said, I'm here to play. I don't care what you guys think. I'm winning games. Just what has he done inside that clubhouse to help change the culture? It's already been a winning culture, but to try and get the Twins over that hump.
Yeah, he's great. He's a special player. Playing against him, you see how talented he is and how special he is, and he's been on a winning team his whole career, pretty much his whole life. So He's a very, very special player on the field, and he's a very, very special person off the field as well. And that's something that I'm getting to see firsthand now, just being around him every day. He brings a lot of special abilities and special talents and good energy to the field every day, and it really is a joy to be around him.
Did it tick you guys off a little bit that everybody just tried to say White Sox are the champs, best team in the American League, gave nobody else in the Central, heck, pretty much didn't give very many people other than maybe like the Astros, Yankees, some team, Blue Jays, a chance in the American League? Did you guys go, whoa, we're still the big boys in this division? Did that tick you off?
I honestly, there's so many new faces on this team. I don't really, like me personally, the way I see it, I didn't know much about the division at all coming into it, so I don't really hear that or listen to that. I don't follow that as far as what other people are saying. It's not something that I do on a day-to-day basis, is listen to what this person says or this person says. So not really. I haven't really heard that. There's a lot of new faces on this team, and there's a lot of guys that come over that have won for a long time and that would say or bring winning attitudes. So I don't hear that. That makes any
sense.
That's
just us in the media talking about
it. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I don't mean to say this, but I don't listen
to
y'all.
You can say it.
I don't
know how it rolls here.
Yeah,
you can be totally honest.
I don't listen to y'all, so I don't listen to the media anymore. I learned my lesson that way. So I just kind of keep that stuff at a distance and control what I can control on a day-to-day basis and with myself and getting my work done. And other than that, I just kind of don't listen to the noise.
Your career now has been pretty interesting with the places you've gone. I mean, obviously, we all know about this place, but then you go to the Yankees, which is a whole different ball mm-hmm. game. Then you go to the Reds, now to the Twins. What's the difference playing on the coast, mm-hmm. playing here, big market, but the A's are different, as we know, going to the Yankees and then playing in the Midwest? What's the difference between the different places?
It's location geographically, I couldn't have done it any crazier. Go as far west as you can go, then go all the way up to the northeast, and go right to the middle, then go all the way to the top. If I knock out a Florida team, then I kind of will be all over the place. I'll be literally all over the map. Every team's unique in their own way. Truly are. I mean, but it's so every team's so different. It's so different in their own way as well. Just like you got to just think of like living your life in a different place. You literally just up and move to a random place, and sometimes not by choice. So you just got to adapt on the fly and kind of make the most out of it as you can. But literally, I mean, a lot of places just couldn't be more different.
Let's end on this. You know, we start seeing you growing a family while you're here.
Yeah.
How is the family? How is everybody? And what's going on with Sonny Gray off the field?
Yeah, everyone's great. Everyone's really, really good. My wife, Jessica, she's doing awesome. We live in Tennessee still, right south of Nashville. Gunner was born while I was in Oakland in 2015. He's seven now, so he's growing up and he's in first grade and going to school and playing baseball and playing hockey and doing his thing. And now Declan was born in New York. He's three, turns four in September. He's awesome. Gunner and Declan couldn't be the opposite from each other, and they're both so awesome in their own way. Declan is so loving and smiles and just such a good kid. They're growing up. Family's great. Everything's great. I texted Jessica and was talking to her a little bit yesterday, just about being back out here, and she said the same thing. She said, "Yeah, that place does feel like home." She did mention Bo Mill because we were so close with Bo Mill when he was here. She said if Bo Mill was still there, it'd really feel like. And I was like, yeah, I know. But I did talk to him recently, and he said he was doing well. I know he's been out for a little bit of time. He said he was feeling well and feeling really good. So that was good news and good to hear. But everything's good, and everything's good with us. Just really want to, at this point in my career, I've been close at times. I just really want to win a championship, and it's kind of like my main focus is I do want to get back to the postseason and win a championship, and hopefully it's here in Minnesota.
Yeah, on the Bob Melvin front, doing well. I was texting with him, and he wants to get back on, like, Thursday. And I think the Padres are like, well, let's take a little more time. but he is doing well, and I know about your relationship and how much he loved you. And that's kind of like the one thing that, you know, it's like every single series we always have, like, a former A, and we love bringing him over here. And I just always want to say thank you because you were always so good to us here with the A's broadcasters and all the different shows that I did. And, of course, we'll always be rooting for you. And good luck the rest of the season. You be well with the family. And hopefully sometime we'll see you in the postseason.
That's right. Hopefully this year.
The great Sonny Gray. Thanks so much, Sonny. Right here on A's Cast Live.
The Coliseum has gone by many names, but none better than The Last Dive Bar. Hi, everyone. Ken Korak here, and my friends at Last Dive Bar are helping us celebrate our longtime home. Last Dive Bar has the most unique merchandise for all Oakland baseball fans. T-shirts, sweatshirts, the Ray Fosse line, and my personal favorite, the lights have taken full effect. Visit their website at lastdivebar.com or follow them on social media at Last Dive Bar. All proceeds are invested back into the A's Community Fund and their affiliated charities. Go to lastdivebar.com. That's Last Dive Bar.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
The reality is minor league baseball right now, on average, is playing games that are 2 hours and 34 minutes, nearly a half hour shorter than the Major League Baseball average. A half hour, because the Major League Baseball average is down, but what is it at?
So if you look now, it's like 3 hours, 4 minutes, and 53 seconds. So 3:05, down from 3:10 from last year.
So 3:05 is a half-hour difference from 2:34. So in the minor leagues, they're playing a half hour short, a little bit, it's about 30 and change, shorter than what they're doing at the big league level. Vegas right now, how about just our own affiliates? Las Vegas, AAA, 2 hours and 51. And think about that. They're playing games that are 14 to 10. 11, 13, 11. They're playing in band boxes. They're playing in elevation. They're playing in desert air. Balls flying all over the place. Every guy looks like he's freaking Mickey Mantle down there, and they're playing 2 hours and 51 minutes. They're playing well under 3. Even if you gave the extra time for what you're saying commercials are in a – and I'm not – obviously the commercials for national games are even longer. We're not going to count those. Because not like we're playing too many national games anyway. So,
we have a couple coming up in June.
But there you go. Midland, 2 hours and 35 minutes. Lansing, 2 hours and 36 minutes. Alex Jensen and the Stockton Ports got to get their act together. They're 2 hours and 45 minutes. But what you're seeing is you're seeing basically the way the game was meant to be played. And I go back to Ken Burns' baseball, his documentary all those years, and you watch the old footage, what you would see is it didn't matter what team, everybody ran off the field, everybody ran on the field. Everybody got the ball, everybody throw it. Pitcher would get his 8 pitches, you throw it down to second, roll around the horn, boom, give it back to the pitcher, let's go. Batter steps up, batter doesn't adjust all the gloves, doesn't step out constantly. You know who I saw last night is a relic? He's a relic of his time. Just take a guess who that may be.
A relic of his time in Major League Baseball?
Yes. He's a relic. He pitched last night.
Oh, pitched last night. Here?
Yep. Because I knew we were going to talk about this today, so I paid attention.
Chris Archer.
I bet most of you didn't pay attention.
Chris Archer.
I bet you didn't, did you? No one paid attention. I'm pointing to multiple people. Chris Archer, if you go back and watch that game last night, slider, not happy about the call. Catch it. Walk around the mound. Walk off to the mound. Dig on the mound. Look at this. How slow Chris Archer worked between every pitch last night just shows you that's the old way. Because what have we been seeing with Zach Logue, Celsith, who pitched for the Angels? We're seeing guys.
Cole Irvin.
We're seeing guys get the ball, pitch as fast as you can. Cole Irvin learned when he was at the University of Oregon that a pitcher takes, what was it, 19 seconds, he said?
Yeah.
The sports psychologist who came to work with Oregon, I can't remember his name, said the hitter, it takes him 19 seconds to basically dissect everything that just happened to him in an at-bat. So from the time the pitcher releases it and he decides whether to swing or not, the clock starts 19 seconds for him to forget about that. That's why Cole Irvin wants to throw the ball before – he wants to get the ball back and throw it before 19 seconds because the hitter's not finished with the last pitch yet. Yeah. I mean, that's cerebral stuff, well, right? That's neuroscience.
Yes.
That's where this game is going. So what they're doing now is we're not worried about neuroscience. What we're worried about is speeding up the game. And what we're seeing is by making the hitters, and Roxy Bernstein, who's here in the ballpark tonight, was talking to us with his work with Pac-12 Network, what he's seeing in college baseball. Because in college baseball, you better get as a hitter into the box. You can't fool around with the pitch clock. If you try and jump into the box real quick with 5 seconds left to mess up the pitcher, they call a strike on you. So they're forcing the hitters get in the box, forcing the pitcher to throw it within X amount of seconds, which is just what it's doing. We're training everybody to play at a better pace. Because I said this with our own Ray Fossey for all these years, because Ray talked about we didn't get to the ballpark this early. We didn't take this long to play. And what happened over time is Major League Baseball players started getting to the ballpark earlier and earlier and earlier. They would work out, they would have lunch, and they would be here all day. And after the game, they eat the spread after the game. So the fact that the players were here at 11 or noon for a 7 o'clock start and would still be here eating after the game, and it's well after 10 o'clock, it just – players got you. I think of Marcus Semien, God bless him, but Marcus Semien would basically be here all day. It became his lifestyle. Why would Marcus care if the game was 2 hours 45 or 3 hours and 15? He's been here all day. It's become a routine that they were just, they're not like regular employees. Like when Cody gets off the clock, Cody's out of here.
Yeah, I go home.
Cody's not sitting around going, I could still be here 2 more hours. Cody's off the clock. He's gone. These guys' clocks, and I think this is proving what I've said. Once again, I'm not right on a lot of things, but I think I'm dead right on this, is these guys didn't care how slow they were playing. And just over years, it got longer and longer and more pitching changes and more pitching changes. And we see the evolution of the game go from 2 hours 45, 250, 255, 3, now 3 hours and 5 minutes, 3 hours. It just kept getting worse. All we've had to do is force them back to playing at the right pace, and already we're seeing dividends in the minor leagues. Pitch clock's working.
Yeah, and tonight we're going to live stream Cole Irvin's start in Stockton. And you mentioned, you know, I looked it up, 2 hours and 45 minutes for a Stockton game. It's going to be well under that tonight with Cole on the mound. The way as quick as he works, he's one of the quickest workers in Major League Baseball. If you look at pace on Fangraphs, which I do because I'm a nerd, Cole's one of the fastest pitchers when it comes to that. That game's going to go by so quickly, and we can actually talk to him about, like, because he said he's never pitched in the Cal League before. Ask him what his experience is like, dealing with the pitch clock, and kind of getting that, because it's coming next year. I mean, it's one of the rules that's going to come next year, and people are going to have to learn to play with it and adapt to it, because it is going to speed up the games. Now, how's that going
to – And by the way, for all the I don't understand all the amateur GMs out there who complain, baseball shouldn't have a clock, oh, my God. We're all seeing, and you know who's really seen it, and I give him a lot of credit, it's Dallas Braden. Dallas Braden has brought this up multiple times on the TV broadcast going, look how fast these guys work. This is a product of what's coming from the minor leagues. You can train these guys how to play the game the right way. Every single game has a clock. Does an NFL team have endless time to get a playoff?
No, there's a thing called a play clock.
Does a basketball team have endless time to bring the ball up the floor and get past the half court line?
They have a shot clock.
Everybody has a basically, let's play at a better, faster pace because a better, faster pace because human beings – playing at a faster pace are more entertaining to watch.
I'll give you,
by the way, what are we in?
In the entertainment business?
Thank you.
I'll give you a good example. The goals per game in the Stanley Cup playoffs this year are up from every year.
You mean scoring more goals?
They're scoring more goals.
A faster-paced hockey game? Yeah. Versus, I'll give you one, the New Jersey Devils, who were great back in the day, who played that trap. I'm not claiming to be Johnny Hockey, all right?
Marty Brodeur, great player. Patrick Elias.
Martin Brodeur.
Scott Niedermayer.
I am not Johnny Hockey, okay?
No, he plays for Calgary. That's Johnny Gaudreau.
I'm not Gordie Howe, Mr. Hockey. I just know that back in the day, clutching, grabbing, zone defense that they were playing in New Jersey, which worked.
Oh, you're confusing me. I thought you were talking about Jim Boeheim and
or Jim Boeheim. Or I'd go
Boeheim, sorry.
Four corners with Dean Smith. And back, the only guy that could keep Michael Jordan under 20 points a game was Dean Smith at North Carolina. You've heard about that, right?
Yeah, his own coach.
His own coach was the only guy that could keep him under 20. Playing that way is boring and not entertaining. So why are we doing it? So the pitch clock that we've all wanted, that some of you have fought, stick it. It's coming to baseball at the big league level, and it works. And we're seeing it across minor league baseball working. And we're now seeing it creep into major league baseball because these young pitchers are now coming up, and they work fast, and this is what they know. And it's a pleasure. Silseth, I hated to see what he did against the A's, but wasn't it a pleasure to watch that? Isn't it Zach Logue to watch him get the ball and go? Cole Irvin, get the ball and go? Don't you like that?
You know, I thought it was great. And, you know, I go to a lot of minor league baseball games, and they're pretty quick. Like, the pitch clock is, like, again, it's coming next year. You know, don't get me started on the shift banning, but the pitch clock is going to be good for the sport, I think, for sure. Because you're going to see – hopefully maybe next year we won't have to hear you talk about the time of games on postgame anymore. I mean, I think that'll always be a thing, but it won't be 3 hours and 23 minutes.
Okay, for example, you start at 6:40.
Yeah.
7:40, 8:40, 2 hours now it's 8:40.
Yeah.
All right. Now you add another 30, 40 minutes. I now, as a father, can really think about bringing my kids to games on a school night. Versus you start at 7:07 and you're playing 3 hours and 5 minutes, it's kind of tough to say, hey, let's go to the old ballpark and the game ends at 10:10. By the time we get home, by the time we get to bed, you got to get up for school in the morning. Little Johnny and little Susie haven't gotten ample sleep because they've been at the ballpark.
Can you show any other guys' names?
Little Billy hasn't got.
Little Timmy, too.
Little Timmy hasn't got an adequate night's sleep. Well, if we're now going to start at 6:40, which I think is brilliant, and you're telling me I can have games that are hours and 2:40, 2:45, I can now, on school nights, not only non-school nights, and we all know attendance goes up in the summer, but now maybe attendance goes up, and it helps. It just, I mean, players, you complain that people are not in the seats. Well, you're playing at 10:30 at night on a school night.
Yeah, it's never good.
You're playing long, slow, boring games, and you want everybody to do that. Hey, how about we start early, play faster? That's better for everybody.
I'll have to show you the numbers on the website that I have access to now for the length of games and attendance. I can see all that stuff now.
You're weaponized now with attendance numbers.
Between that and Baseball Reference, StatHead, and all the stuff I have been using for years, and now having this website, I can look up everything, including Baseball Savant, which is free, but you have to know what you're looking for.
And just going to say this briefly. Another article has come out. It was in the New York Times. Did you read it?
No, I don't have access. Was it a free article in the Times?
Yeah, I know sometimes the Times will pop up and they want you to pay for it. I got to read it. I don't know why. But I got to read it, and I got a chuckle because I know there's going to be a part of the fan base that goes the traditional, you see? But it's the same article that's been written for now decades. The article could have been written in the 90s, early 2000s, 2010s. It's the same thing rehashed over and over and over again. And the fact that you're having an article like that again makes you – I mean, we could have over 30 years of these articles saying the same thing.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to rehash what the article had to say. All you have to do is see You can research it. There's been a bazillion of these articles written about the A's, the Raiders. I've lived through all of it, and it's just flat out tired. And if you ever really wanted to get into attendance through all the years since 1968, you now
I have access to it.
You have access to every year, and what it's going to tell you is all the people who call up and spout stuff about attendance on my show, the A's Clubhouse Show, the call-in show, your information's not correct. Literally, your information's not correct.
I mean, I could break it down for you real quick.
I don't want to get into it.
I have the numbers from the 80s.
All I care about are the people that do come to the games. That's what I care about. And I don't care about the people who don't come to games. And if you're a fan that just listens to A's Cast, we love you. If you're a fan that, you know, there's a lot of reasons why people can't come to games. But if you can listen on A's Cast, you can listen on the A's Radio Network, if you can watch our friends, NBC Sports California, we love all of you. Problem is, and I've always said this about attendance, is you upset the people who do show up, and you're really talking about the people who don't show up, and they're non-factors because they're not listening to this anyway. If you don't like the A's, you're not listening to A's Cast.
That's probably true.
Right? So why am I going to talk to people who are not listening to A's Cast?
I can tell you real quick, shameless self-promotion, we're still the number one podcast in baseball.
We're just not the number one podcast. We're the number one podcast by a lot.
Trust me, I have the data. As a numbers guy, I have access to that. I've had access to that.
So we could say this. Attendance does not affect our product.
It does not, no. Either does the play of the team either.
Well, the play of the team is a whole different ball game. So we had it yesterday on the rundown. You took it off.
No,
you have it here. It's the number one line in your playbook that Cody puts us together. So if you want to get mad at somebody, get mad at Cody. The A's have scored one run or less 15 times this year.
I think it's two runs or less in 20 of their 38 games.
The A's have been outscored in this three-game losing streak 16-3.
That's one run per game.
They're 1-for-20 with runners in scoring position during the skid. They rank dead last.
Oh, I know this already.
All right, read it off.
Dead last in batting average, 199.
Okay.
Dead last in – I have OPS. I have the whole OPS. They're dead last in OPS. They're so bad, they're 34 points below the next closest team at 574.
So just to really spell it out, though, so that's last in on-base percentage at 268, last in slugging at 306. Remember, those numbers are looked at like as bad – like you can look at batting average, right?
Yes.
All right.
The OPS, the combination of on base and slugging for people
by the
who
way,
don't know.
I started doing weighted runs created plus last night.
I heard. I told you I listened to the whole hour and 10
what
minutes.
What did you think about me, Sam? Did you agree?
I just think that people are using these a little too generically to try to make a point.
Who is?
Just when people are trying to make a point for a player that might not be performing well.
So, weighted runs created plus. And another thing, when I say look, you got to look at it like an average. I don't know, did I explain that right last night? You have to, because an average, the average score is 100.
Yes, yes.
Right?
Yes.
So look
you,
at
you
it like
it,
an
you
average.
You get it like below, if you're in like, what was it, 85 to 100, you're below average.
Yeah. So look at it as an average. Batting average will have a decimal point in it. Or an ERA, whatever. This does not. It's just looked as an average of averages 100. And every time you get above 100, you become a better player. 160 is elite.
Yes.
Right? 160 is elite. And that's why Babe Ruth is number one in everything.
Yeah, he was a nice little player.
You know, it's always funny. It's like we're going to use these numbers to really delve into it. Well, why is Ruth still number one in everything? And that's always the funny thing when you look at weighted runs created plus or OPS plus.
OPS plus.
Babe Ruth is still the champion when it comes to all of that. Well, now joining us here on A's Cast Live, he is the man that you love to watch pitch every 5 days, as he absolutely brings it for your Oakland Athletics. Frankie Montas is with us here on A's Cast Live. How are you?
I'm good. How about you?
I'm doing well. And, you know, just watching you pitch recently, I think you got to be feeling great, because the other day, 12 strikeouts, but just in command of the body, of the mind. You can really see right now where you are in your career, and you got to be feeling great.
I feel pretty good. First of all, just want to thank God, you know, just for keeping me healthy, you know. And I'm just trying to do my job, man. I'm just trying to go out there every 5 days and do my best.
I remember doing an interview with you, and I don't know if you remember, but it was it was the Bay Bridge series, so it was years ago. It was in San Francisco. You just made the team, right? You just had a baby.
Remember.
You remember this?
Yeah,
and I remember going, like, the world's your oyster right now. To think where you were then, and that's when you're really kind of learning the split, to where you are now. We'll go on the field, off the field. We'll start on the field. How are you now different than that guy that I had that interview with in San Francisco?
Well, I feel like it was just like I got more experience, like, with the years. You know, I have played with really good pitchers that they've been in Oakland in the past, you know. And I'm just trying to learn as much as I can every year, you know, just trying to improve whatever I got to do, you know. Maybe fastball command, my splitter, just trying to get a new pitch. Whatever I got to do to improve my pitching, I'm always willing to do.
It always, by the way, it always drives me nuts when they take you out. It drives me nuts. I go, and I always go, Frankie Montas is built like a middle linebacker in the NFL. He's not some slim kid who you got to worry about, oh, my God, Frankie's at 80 pitches. You're built to go 120, 130. Do you ever just go, man, leave me out here?
Man, I'm always cool with whatever, you know. I mean, I'm pretty open about it. If I'm feeling like I can keep going, like, they know it, because I let them know. I was like, hey, I'm good to go. You know, if I feel good with, let's say, whatever, on the seventh inning with almost 100 pitches, and I tell them, hey, give me one more, it's because I feel good and I'm ready to go out there and just keep doing 100%, just keep them rolling.
Yeah, I will always say Frankie Montas is not a fragile butterfly.
Nah,
this
man.
Guy is ready, and I'm always like, looking down at the bullpen, I'm looking at Frankie, I'm looking at the bullpen, I'm like, I don't think anyone's got better stuff than Frankie Montas. I want you on the mound.
Man, I'm just blessed and glad to be here, man, and be able to help him whatever I can, you know. And like, man, I'm the type of guy that, like, I'm always asking questions, you know. I don't care if you just got to the league, if you have 10 years in the league. Like, I talked a lot with Paul, you know, Caprillion, like, guys in the past, like Bassi, Minaya. Like, me and Bassi pretty much, like, been together for a lot of years, because we were together in the White Sox. And
yeah,
those two guys, Minaya and Bassi, were two guys that I look up to, you know. The way they handle themselves, the way they go out there, the way they go about the business. Like I wanted to be like that, you know what I'm saying? And just be able to learn from those guys. And Edwin Jackson in the past, you
yeah.
know, Cahill, all those guys. I always trying to get the good things about them, you know, how they go about their business, how they pitch, how they get prepared to pitch every 5 days. That's some things that are like I'm always trying to looking for it, so I can do it and trying to go out there and have a good game.
Edwin Jackson's like one of the greatest resources, because he's played for every
man.
Team.
Oh,
it's like he can tell you any restaurant,
guy,
any golf course,
guy.
Anything you
he
want.
He knows every city. But I swear to God, that man. Hey, wasn't Seattle? Oh well, in Seattle you got this, you got the sushi, you got this spot. Bro, he knows everything. I swear to God, he played in every city in MLB. I swear.
Yeah, he was a good dude. It was he was always a fun interview, because
yeah,
what a wealth.
Because
obviously you'd want to play in the same spot your entire career, but then. You think about what he did. Like, he played almost for every team. It's like he got to.
Well, it was, what, 17 teams, something like
what
that?
What was it? It's a record.
It was something like that, right?
It's yeah. a record.
Him and this guy, this Dominican dude.
That deal reliever for the A's.
What's his name?
I know exactly what you're talking about.
You're not talking about
the A's.
That.
Yeah, he pitched for the A's. He
pitched a lot with the Cardinals, too.
God, what was his name?
14 teams for Edwin Jackson.
14 teams,
yeah, but
right?
Who's the older one? Our old reliever that we had that pitched for
you're not Arthur Rhodes. It was someone more recently, right?
He's from the Dominican.
His Dominican did. Reliever did. He used to use high pants over here.
Yeah.
He used to wear his pants.
Octavio Dotel.
Dotel, hell yeah.
Yeah, that was the guy.
That guy was.
Well, and it's kind of cool because you got to live in like every major American city.
Seriously.
But what a wealth of knowledge. I went off the field, the young family, what's that done for you?
Man, I feel like that's one of the things that has like helped me grow up as a father, as a man, as a human being, having two kids, and it's just like I wouldn't trade this for anything. Like my mental peace, like just I'm just so blessed that God bless me with a really good family, really good kids, you know. And I feel like that's one of the reasons why like I'm trying to go out there and like always give my best, you know. I don't want to show my son something that like I don't want, like I wouldn't want him to do it in the future, you know what I'm saying? Whatever it is that you're doing, you have to make sure you give 100%, you know. Baseball, or school, whatever it is in life, you know, you have to stay dedicated to whatever you're doing. And that's why I work hard, and I'm just trying to go every 5 days out there and show him that, like, hey, if you give 100%, it don't matter what happened, no matter the results, you're going to go to sleep good.
Obviously, everybody's talking about you in baseball. And I don't know how much you can wall that off, but every article, everything you look at, Frankie Montas, I mean, you legitimately may be the most coveted guy at the deadline. We don't want you to go, right? We want you to stay forever. But are you able to, like, shut that out at all? Because I'm sure, like, your family and everybody knows what's going on. How do you shut how do you have the blinders on for that?
I'm in Oakland right now, right? So I got a pitch for Oakland.
Yeah.
So whatever I'm at right now, that's what I'm focusing. I'm not trying to think about getting traded. I'm here right now. So right here, this is what they need me, you know? So I'm just trying to do my job. That's it. You know, if I get traded, whatever I go, I got to still do my job. I still got to keep on grinding. So right now I'm here. So I'm just focusing, just keep going and help the team whatever I can.
What has Scott Emerson done for you for your career?
He has helped me a lot over the years. You know, like I got here pretty young. You know, I think he was the bullpen coach when I got here. And just like I'm the type of dude, like every year, like I'm not trying to like go from 0 to 100. You know what I'm saying? Like I'm trying to like whatever I'm doing, I'm trying to master that, then move to the next step, whatever it is, you know. The son dudes is just trying to like go from like good to great. Greatness is a process. That's what they said, right? Greatness is a process. You can't just wake up and be great, you know. So he has helped me a lot, just like the mental game, you know, just trying to stay like under control pitching. Because for me, it's just more like mental stuff, you know, just like trying to make sure my head's clear, trying to make sure I'm going out there and I'm not thinking about anything else but pitching, you know. And he has helped me like how to deal with those type of situations, not let the game like speed up on you, you know. Sometimes you're pitching and you get yourself caught up and like throwing pitch after pitch after pitch, and then next thing you know, you have 3 runs and you're like, oh my god, like it's time to wake up, you know. Just trying to stay into the game, and I feel like he has helped me a lot on that.
We've talked a lot, and let's end on this. The speed of the game, the pace of the game. You've been using PitchCom. We're seeing these young guys coming up who are used to the pitch clock. They're working faster. Have you just noticed with PitchCom and these kids that the game is starting to speed up?
Yeah, I mean, I see it. Like, and if I see it, like with some of my guys, I make sure like I tell them, you know, hey, you're the one with the ball in your hands. You know, don't let the game get too quick on you. You know, the game doesn't start until you throw the ball. You know, it ain't going to be no play if you don't throw the ball. So you have to be able to learn how to, like, control the running game, you know, how to not let the game speed you up or, like, get you out of what you're trying to do and trying to work on.
Well, I got to tell you, you know we're all huge fans, and no matter what happens,
I appreciate it, man.
But
it.
You've been a rock of this rotation for a long time, and we've watching you grow as a man, watching you grow as a professional athlete, and truly now one of the most dominant guys in the American League. Has been a lot of fun. So keep doing what you're doing, because every 5 days, Frankie Days is win day in my book.
Right.
Frankie Montas right here on A's Cast Live.
The Coliseum has gone by many names, but none better than the Last Dive Bar. Hi, everyone. Ken Korak here, and my friends at Last Dive Bar are helping us celebrate our longtime home. Last Dive Bar has the most unique merchandise for all Oakland baseball fans. T-shirts, sweatshirts, the Ray Fosse line, and my personal favorite, the lights have taken full effect. Visit their website at lastdivebar.com or follow them on social media at Last Dive Bar. All proceeds are invested back into the A's Community Fund and their affiliated charities. Go to lastdivebar.com. That's Last Dive Bar.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live. Only on Netflix.
A's Cast Live continues from the town. Here's Chris Townsend.
Hey, remember when they said sports wouldn't work on TV?
When did they say that? In the 60s?
60s? 60s?
I don't know. When did they say that sports wouldn't work on TV?
I'm going back to 1939.
Oh.
This isn't going to work.
I guess not.
Sports on television, that's something I wouldn't. That's where we got to do a Larry David. You have the Larry David?
Let me think. I thought I.
Commercials are great. Is that a Bitcoin commercial that he's doing?
I believe so, yeah. You mean this one?
Yeah, I don't think so.
Between games.
Whoops.
The Larry David commercial is great. Where he's back in time, all the great ideas. It's like,
I don't think so.
So we're going to have one of those right now. I'm going to take you back to 1939. It's the first televised sporting event that took place with NBC. NBC.
I think it's that jingle now when I watch stuff on NBC.
It was game two of the Columbia versus Princeton college baseball doubleheader. Not game one. We're doing game two at Andy Coakley Field, 1939. It was broadcast on the network's experimental station, W2XBS. Bill Stern, who was inducted into the National Radio Hall of Fame in 1988, was on the call. There were fewer than 400 television sets used at the time. One camera was used 50 feet from home plate. Princeton won the game 2-1 in 10 innings, a game that took just 2 hours and 15 minutes. The New York Times. A lot of people go, oh, is that the New York Times? That's a big-time publication of record, the New York Times.
Yeah, we already talked about the New York Times today.
They've broken all the stories, the New York Times. The New York Times reviewed the telecast the next day and said in part, quote, "It is difficult to see how this sort of thing can catch the public fancy." So the New York Times in 1939 went, sports on TV, not sure this is going to work out. How did that age?
I don't think so.
By the way, future Hall of Fame quarterback, the great Sid Luckman of the Chicago Bears, the Hall of Famer, was the starting shortstop for Columbia, was 1-for-8 that day with an error over the two games of the doubleheader. How about that?
1939. I think it's right around the same time where Orson Welles did the War of the Worlds broadcast over the radio, where everyone thought that we were really getting attacked by aliens. That shows you how far we've come as a society. And with technology, now we're watching live stream stuff on Twitter and YouTube and Twitch and Facebook. And
I think Congress was delving into UFOs today.
Oh, well. sure there's not a lot of other more important things to worry about, but I guess UFOs are the big thing. There's another good note on your bracket, your packet you have there, too.
What do you got?
It's in the very first page. My good friend Tony La Russa is closing in on history.
Nah. John McGraw. So Tony is in there's a couple doubleheaders today. Can't wait for the MLB scoreboard today on the broadcast. We've got – how many double dips do we have going today?
I think there was three.
Nine innings. Great.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure – I think the White Sox won game one. Let me just double-check. I'm looking right now.
Don't they have the final on the board?
The White Sox won game one, 3-0. So Tony now has
– one win away.
If he wins tonight, he ties him for second all time, but you said Tony doesn't deserve it.
John McGraw. Why would I say –
You think Tony's too old for the game. Game doesn't want Tony in it.
Oh, wow. I'm an ageist now, huh? Is that what you're trying to
say? All the old guys can't win. What? Hey, Dusty Baker's doing a nice job with the Astros.
Yeah, what's he won? So one win away for now Tony to join John McGraw, number two all-time in wins. Tony's going to have to live a long time and manage a long time to catch Connie Mack.
Isn't he like 1,000 wins behind him?
3,776 wins for Connie Mack.
He's like 900 wins behind him. Is that it? I mean, that's Tony needs to manage nine more years at 100-win pace to come close, and he's 77 years old.
By the way, former A and great broadcaster, television broadcaster now for and friend of the program, Carlos Peña, it's his birthday today.
He's how old, 40s?
Is he in his 40s?
Yeah, he definitely is in his 40s. I don't know how old. I was going to say 46. I don't want to shortchange Plotkica, or how do you say it? What's his
name? Plotkica.
Yeah, I don't want to shortchange him, but I think he's somewhere around there. Let's see. Carlos Peña is 44. My bad, I said 46.
Okay, yeah, because I was going to say, he's a lot younger than I am.
Well, I mean, it's only 2 years. I said 46, 44.
All right. So I thought that was an interesting note with the first television broadcast.
Oh, by the way, you mentioned this on post game last night. You were asking if anyone could break down the road home splits for the A's. Well, I did it for you. The A's are currently 5-13 at home. How many runs per game are they averaging at home?
I know I'm going to go lower than it is. It feels like one something.
You're close. They've scored 43 runs at home, so if you take that divided by 18, you get 2.4 runs per game.
That seems like a lot.
They've gone out. They've only scored three runs their last three games.
Does it seem like over two runs a game for this team at home? They don't score, ever.
They've allowed 76 runs, meaning that they've given up 4.2 runs per game.
Okay, so wait a minute. The other team – okay, so it's the same field, right?
Yes.
Same dimensions. Same stadium.
Same dimensions.
Same weather.
Yep.
Same baseballs.
Yep.
The other team scores runs, but the A's don't.
That's correct. But they're only giving up four runs per game. So the starting pitching is doing their job. On the road, they're 10-10. They've scored 80 runs, and they've allowed 68. Right now, the A's are 5-13, as I mentioned. Their worst win-loss record under Billy Beane, the Billy Beane era, is 34-47. They did it twice in 2015 and 2016 under the great Bob Melvin. The A's need to go 30-33 to not finish with 34 wins at home.
Can we go back and check tapes? What did I talk about in those years? Like, how did I get through the seasons?
You would have talked about who's good. Donaldson was gone. Billy Butler and Danny Valencia fighting.
Brett Laurie.
Yeah, Laurie. Who would have been a good starting pitcher? Sonny.
Oh, we're talking about Sonny getting traded.
Yeah. I don't know. I really don't. Matt Olson come up and playing right field and being sent down.
Oh, God. Remember that. Why? Wait a minute. I thought this guy was the first baseman of the future, and you got him playing right field all the time. What is the thinking there? Oh, by the way, you put him at first base, and he turns out to be, like, arguably the best defensive first baseman in the game, but you've been shipping him back to AAA, and he's been playing right field. What the hell are you doing?
AAA Nashville, too.
What are you doing?
Yeah, it was a weird time. You know, there was an article put out today by MLB.com.
Wouldn't that be interesting to go back and listen to some of my shows from 15 and 16, especially my talk shows on 95.7, to think, with the A's, what did I talk about night after night after night?
Yeah, it would have been brutal. Real quick before Corey Provis, the radio voice of the Twins, comes over, there was an article on MLB.com, one way to fix every team right now. What do you think the A's –
How to fix it?
Yeah. one quick fix for the A's
there,
right now.
There is none.
What do you want to know what it was? It had nothing to do with hitting.
There is absolutely nothing you can do to this team right now to quick fix it.
Oh, I'll tell you what
That's
it was.
Stupid.
I'll tell you what it was. Trade Paul Blackburn is what it said.
That.
What? How's that? What is that going to do? Who are you trading him for? Are you trading for Giancarlo Stanton? Are you trading for a guy that's hitting?
Wait, you're going to trade one of the guys? The pitching's not been the problem.
He does lead the team in war, if you're wondering.
Pitching's not been the problem. You're trying to say we trade Paul Blackburn, that's going to fix the team? That's got to be the dumbest thing. Even Corey is going to sit here and tell us that's the dumbest thing he's ever heard.
Well, we'll see. I mean, they need pitching, too.
So check that. Corey, nice to meet you. Chris Townsend with the A's.
Hi, guys. How are you? Sorry I'm a couple minutes late. How are you?
No problem. I guess MLB has just come out with an article. We've all done good years and bad years, right? We've done a lot of good years here with the A's. Right now we're into a bad year. We're just talking about, you know, worst years at home record in the Billy Bean era. And I'm trying to figure out – I don't even remember what I said on my shows in 15 and 16. How did I even get through those years? But MLB – .com had the article quick fix.
It was like a quick fix for every MLB team.
And the quick fix for the A's, now that you've seen the A's in Minnesota and here,
right?
It was trade Paul Blackburn.
That's going to solve all the problems.
Next thing you know, we're going to have 30,000 people here.
I don't think that's the only issue right now.
We're going to build the new ballpark. Everything's going to be fine. Just trade Paul Blackburn.
That will solve all the problems. Just make that one transaction. And this place will be filled. I just disagree with that just a little bit, and I'm sure you guys do as well.
Yeah, it'll be like Raider games again if you have Paul Blackburn not here anymore. How are you? Everything
I'm
good?
It's great to be out here. Beautiful day, and love coming out here. And it is what it is coming here right now, but my memories of this place coming here not too long ago, great crowds, Sean Doolittle coming in, the cats in right field, headbanging, the flags, the music. Those are my memories recently of the Coliseum. So it's sad to see what's going on right here because this is a great fan base.
Well, A's killer Carlos Correa, we haven't heard. We heard today could be reinstated at the bad finger. Luckily, it wasn't broken. Where are we with him? We've been down here. Is he reinstated or is that going to be tomorrow?
He is not back tonight, but all signs are pointing towards tomorrow, that he's going to be back tomorrow, and then we'll see what they do with Royce Lewis. That's an interesting question.
Trade
from the
him
Twins
to the
side.
A's, right?
Trade, make that move. And
for
then
Frankie Montas?
Forget Blackburn. Yeah, forget Blackburn.
Then you want Blackburn instead?
No, but forget the Blackburn idea. If you get Royce Lewis, then this place will be packed. But I think Correa's back tomorrow. You know, barring, you know, he's working out as we speak right now, barring something happening today or tonight, I think Carlos is off the IL tomorrow.
I think about the Twins, and I love going to Target Field. I mean, unfortunately, we haven't been there in a while, but last time I was there, I'm like, God, this place is fantastic. And I just think about this team and the struggles to get over the hump in the postseason, and what a perfect guy to sign, because as we have had to deal with for years and other teams in the postseason, he's the dude. He's that guy. And I'm just wondering what the true – we had Sonny Gray on earlier. You know, we've known Sonny since we drafted him in the first round out of Vanderbilt, and great to see him again. Just asking, like, what does he do for that clubhouse to get this team over the hump? Because obviously the Twins have been good for a long time.
They've been good, but they just have had this horrendous postseason losing streak, 18 straight postseason losses. But they've tried to just add from the outside guys that have postseason experience to help – impact that drought, to try to change that narrative. And you go with the guy at shortstop who won that tainted World Series in 17. I have no issue saying that, but still the postseason resume speaks for itself. The guy has been a perennial postseason player. He's performed at the highest level. He is amazing to watch at short. I'll say this, you know, I saw him just for 6 or 7 games the last, you know, few seasons, but before he got hurt, watching him play shortstop every single day, you get it. You see why the platinum glove. You see why the gold glove, the arm strength, the quick hands, all the skills that you want in a shortstop, that 6 foot, 4 inch frame. I get it now. I mean, seeing him every single day, this guy is the real deal, and that's why, you know, he's making the money that he's making. And, you know, I hope it's going to be a 3-year run. I have my doubts about that. It's an interesting contract he signed, but for as long as he's a Twin, it's great to have him.
Now, I want you to know you're safe here. If you ever want to talk about the Astros being tainted, this is the place
this
you
is
can
the place
do,
to
it
do it.
Because you're speaking to the people who love to hear that.
Yeah, facts are facts. I mean, like, you can't argue that.
So let's just say Correa continues to play well, stays healthy, leads you guys deeper into the postseason, because I think everybody jumped the gun on the White Sox saying that Twins are not the team. Twins, to me, are still the team to beat. What do you do if he's like, you know what, let's ink something up long term. I love Minnesota. I love playing here. Target Field's awesome. This is a great place for me. I think I can win another championship here. You got this hotshot kid at short. Mm-hmm. What do you do?
Well, let's see what happens if Carlos is back tomorrow and Royce goes back down. I'm curious to see if he goes back down and just plays short, or 7 games a week. If he's at short for 4 days, he plays third base for 2 and plays left field. He hasn't done that yet, but I'm wondering if he does go back down, does Royce move around a little bit more than he has? Now, he was the Fall League MVP, you know, pre-pandemic, and he was playing center field in the Arizona Fall League. That was out of necessity based on some other roster management. That was not the plan, just based on the only way Royce was going to play on that team was for him to play center, and he played great, and he was the MVP. That's fine. But I'm curious to see if indeed that's the move. Carlos is back and Royce is down. I think he's going to move around a little bit for the first time. Still play the bulk of his time at short, but maybe squeeze in some third and some left field here if that move happens.
What a luxury, because you already got a terrific third baseman. You already got a shortstop playing second base. Adding another out, your outfield's already fantastic. I mean, if Byron can play more, hopefully, but I mean, isn't that just a wealth right there of athletes and defense at one of the great strengths of the ball club?
And you look at how they added to this team after the lockout ended. They were busy. They did not trade away too many young players. They did trade away a first-round pick from last year to get Sonny Gray and Chase Petty. But in terms of position players, they loved the deal that they made with the Blue Jays for Berríos last year to get 2 guys. Austin Martin was viewed as the best bat in the 2020 draft. He's a shortstop, also playing some second base. He's moving around, playing some outfield. He's a double A. They got Simeon Woods Richardson in that trade. He's off to a great start, starting at double A. So they added to their team without giving up some of their top guys. And that's why the farm system, they like it a lot. Now, it's going to take a hit as these guys mature and graduate and eventually impact the big league club. But they like their farm system a lot. So adding from within is still going to be a possibility from starters who did not throw in 2020, that we know of, no minor league season. Some of these guys were hurt in 2021, but a few of these guys that are back healthy in 2022 are looking really good, and not looking good at A ball. I mean, they're at double A and triple A, so they're on the cusp of being at Target Field here pretty soon.
Before we get to pitching and obviously joking, but Frankie Montas obviously would be someone that Twins would be interested in, but Sanchez behind the dish, I just wonder for him. Great to play for the Yankees. Great to play on the biggest stage. Every player should want that. But sometimes, I mean, everything you do, they were on him on everything. And now to go to Minnesota, not saying that you guys aren't covered, not saying Minnesota's not a great sports town, working in the NFL, I've done games, Raiders against the Vikings. I mean, I love Minnesota, but just – how nice is it for him to be out of New York in a place like Minnesota where everybody is just not ridiculing him every game? For if there's a pass ball next, you know, it's a big thing in the notes every day. How
right.
big is that for him?
Right. I mean, if Gary goes 0-10, 0-12, he's not being booed. If he goes 0-10, 0-12 at Yankee Stadium for the third or fourth straight year he's had a spell like that, they're probably killing him. He had a play defensively on the last homestand that if you watched it, it looked bad. That a throw in from left field and a relay play, he missed it badly. And immediately you're like, oh, there's Sanchez, bad defense. But then if you look at the replay, the relay threw at the lip of the infield grass. He had no chance. He's setting up, waiting for the one-hop throw, hit the lip of the grass, a ton of spin, kicked way out of his reach. He had no chance. I think in New York, they would still skewer him for that. Like, that's his fault, when in reality, look at the play, had no chance. The pressure is lightened. No doubt about that. And Sanchez wasn't hitting. His numbers weren't all that great until the last 4 or 5 days. Had a great series offensively against Cleveland over the weekend. Had a great game last night. So Sanchez, right now, the bats come to life here a little bit. And that he should be motivated, right? Free agent at the end of the year. You know, get rid of that Yankee stadium. Get rid of that Yankees run. You know, start anew with the Twins and prove to people that, hey, I'm still in my late 20s, that I can play. And I'm deserving of a good contract after the 2022 season. And the run he's on right now offensively is encouraging. And his framing numbers, too, defensively, are going up. He's never going to be the best in the game at blocking balls. But in terms of what the Twins need to save strikes and frame the baseball, his numbers are improving.
When the trading deadline get closer, obviously everybody's going to be calling here for one guy. Even though Paul Blackburn could fix all of Northern,
all the problems,
all of Northern right. California, we may never have an earthquake again if we trade Paul Blackburn. Right. But Frankie Montas, and we just had Frankie on, and it's like, I've been doing all these interviews with him. I've watched him grow as a professional. You just hate to lose him, but we know it's going to happen. But what he could mean to somebody, I mean, right before you guys got here, he just punched out 12 against the Angels. He looks pretty dominant. He's strong. What could a guy like that help out with already the good arms that you have?
Well, I think it just enhances the depth that they have. And Joe Ryan, who has become our de facto one, and he's a rookie. He's made, 12 starts in his career. He was out there on opening day, second Twins rookie to ever do that. You know, is Joe Ryan really a number one? I don't think we know that yet. Frankie Montas is that guy. Frankie Montas has the resume and the stuff to be an elite frontline starter. So you get to that postseason series, and that's a pretty good, you know, you trim down that starting staff. I think it would mean wonders for any team. And I'm sure the Twins are going to be in on him, as I'm sure the other, 28 other teams would love to have Frankie Montas on their team. So he would do wonders for the staff, and I think that would be pretty compelling that if you get to the final three games of the year, the Twins play in Chicago. They wrap up the season three games against the White Sox, and if it came down to that and you got Frankie Montas going up against Lance Lynn or Dylan Cease or Lucas Giolito, you like your chances with the game and maybe the postseason on the line on that particular day.
Well, Royce just has to walk right over.
You're in on him. I get it, man. You know, the first overall pick in 2017. And
it's like a minute walk from clubhouse to clubhouse.
It's pretty short.
We just switch gear. Right. It'd be that fast.
I mean, Manaea did it in spring training, right?
Manaea left his gear. Did you hear about that?
I just know that he was traded, and then that same day he faced the A's in spring training as a Padre.
So this is so Oakland A's. Manaea gets traded. We're all in there, ho-ho cam. He comes in, tears, hugging everybody. Bassett's up. We knew, but Bassett had already left.
Right.
Chapman, Olson. But he was like the final piece. It was very emotional. You know, everybody went out. I actually said, hey, can I get you over to the Padres after? And he's like, all right. So I'm actually doing the interview with Dalton Jeffries, and he's crying with guys, and I'm like, cameras, like, this is bizarre. He leaves his stuff. His stuff is in the locker. His car is in the A's parking lot. He walks over, has his green glove. Luckily, the gold shoes match the Padres gold, right? Pitches for the Padres. He comes back. So I'm in the Padres clubhouse, and, I'm cool with Melvin. So I'm in there, and I get Manaea. Manaea has to go get all that. You're like, only this could happen to the Oakland A's. You trade the guy. He pitches against you that day, but all this stuff is still in the clubhouse. His car is still in the A's parking lot. I mean, where else does this happen in Major League Baseball other than the Oakland A's?
Yeah, that stuff does happen. That's odd. That's an odd story. But, yeah, I mean, I think that it's sad, though. I mean, all this that's going on, all these great players have left this team and this awesome team, contending team, the last couple of years, and it's sad. Mark Kotze is a guy, I was lucky enough to cover him with the Milwaukee Brewers in 2011, so I'll always root for him. He was great to me that year, came up with some big hits during that playoff year for Milwaukee. He and Council were teammates, and so I'll root for Mark Kotze forever, so I wish him the best.
What do you expect after what you've seen so far? Obviously injuries, but there's been times they haven't played well. What do you expect from the White Sox?
I think their depth is being tested. I mean, the White Sox, per MLB.com, have the worst farm system in Major League Baseball, so their depth is being tested. But still, they just got Yoan Moncada back. They're going to get Lance Lynn back here in June. They're going to get Eloy Jimenez back here at some point over the summer. And when they have all their dudes, That's a great lineup. That's a beast of a pitching staff. Joe Kelly's been up and down, but he's just came back from the injured list. Liam Hendricks is going to figure it out. I mean, if the White Sox have all their guys, you know, I think it's a tough matchup. The Twins right now, over the next couple of weeks, you know, after they're done with this series, they go to Kansas City, go home, it's Royals and Tigers. Go back on the road, it's Tigers. So they have a stretch here the next 2.5-3 weeks that this has to be a run here. I mean, it'd be great if they win every single game, but I think right now the schedule's going to toughen up in June. They go to Toronto. The Yankees come to Target Field. The Rays come to Target Field. So the schedule picks up significantly for the Twins in June. So now's the time that if the Twins are going to build a cushion and add to their lead, it has to happen here over the next couple of weeks.
Let's end on this. There's been a lot of interesting things at the start of the season. Obviously, the way we all got started after lockout. But, you know, our man Chris Bassett, Eric Chavez, wondering what the baseball is. Wonder what it is day-to-day, let alone for the national games or our new Apple and Peacock games. Batting average down, home runs down, humidors. Everybody has a humidor now. We have a whole thing about how minor league games are going much faster. We're seeing these young pitchers come up, work faster, PitchCom. For you, what's been the most interesting thing so far this season?
I like PitchCom. Saw it in spring training. I was a fan of it in terms of concept and then had to see it play out in spring training games. Loved it then, and I think it certainly has helped in terms of pace of play. You're not seeing all the meetings. You're not seeing too many pitchers get crossed up. At least you shouldn't in theory. So I'm a big fan. I think PitchCom has been great. I think next season the shift goes away. I think we will see a pitch clock. I'm not as, you know, excited about the increased size of bases that they're dabbling with in the minor leagues. 15 inches right now. They're going up to 18 inches. That, to me, is not as important as a pitch clock. And if for a while I was for the shift, but now over time I'd be okay if that went away. But I think PitchCom has really done wonders here, seeing the pace of play, just seeing how quickly the catcher and pitcher agree on what they're going to throw, when they're going to throw it. I think that's been a wonderful addition to this game.
Great stuff. We appreciate it. Have a
good
call
tonight. Guys,
thank
you so much. All right. Thank you for the nice weather, by the way. This is fantastic.
Yeah,
love it.
No matter what,
good,
at least sun in California.
I'll take sun, no possum, man. We got rid of these possums upstairs. I'm broadcasting, looking around the ceiling tiles, not looking at the field, worried about my dinner. So.
Hey, can the possum at least get us some runs?
Yeah, you got a possum rally, I'm sure, at some point.
Yeah, fans are putting together rally possum shirts. So we'll
sounds
see.
About right. All right,
appreciate
guys, thank you.
It.
Take
we
care.
Got, we got more coming up next right here on A's Cast Live.
The Coliseum has gone by many names, but none better than The Last Dive Bar. Hi, everyone. Ken Korak here, and my friends at Last Dive Bar are helping us celebrate our longtime home. Last Dive Bar has the most unique merchandise for all Oakland baseball fans. T-shirts, sweatshirts, the Ray Fosse line, and my personal favorite, the lights have taken full effect. Visit their website at lastdivebar.com or follow them on social media at Last Dive Bar. All proceeds are invested back into the A's Community Fund and their affiliated charities. Go to lastdivebar.com. That's Last Dive Bar.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle, a run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Streaming from the East Bay, A's Cast Live continues with Chris Townsend.
I don't want to talk about runs not being scored. Tonight, it might be crazy how many runs get scored tonight.
I mean, it's Dylan Bundy. He hasn't pitched well against the A's.
Last couple starts, he started out the year solid. Last couple starts, no bueno. Do you have a buying or selling for me?
I can give you one. Let me. We don't need the music because we're close on time. Let me pull out the sheet here. Let's see. What do we got? I have a bunch of them we haven't gone through. We have our crash and burn list we have to go over. Maybe we'll do that on Friday when we're back in the studio.
We need – you know what? There's nothing – so we want to cut – I want to set that up as a bigger thing than just a segment.
Okay. All right. So – let's see, what can we do? All right, we'll do the Angels real quick because we didn't really get into this. According to a source with knowledge of the team's plans, the Angels do not expect any of their starters, including Ohtani, to throw 165 innings. The idea of using a six-man rotation is to build an additional rest for the starters, keeping them in the 145 to 150 innings range. Not that the Angels are setting limits. Over 162 games, things happen, things change. But this is from Eno Saris the other day. There's not a single pitcher that is averaging over 100 pitches per start. One pitcher in the PCL, the Pacific Coast League, is averaging 90 pitches per appearance. Only six over 80. 90 is a new 100, Eno tweeted out. Buying or selling, the Angels will not have a starter go over 165 innings.
I'll buy it.
I mean, that's not a good look. That plays in well for our 200 inning thing.
Well, it'll be a real testament that if they don't make it and you have this great offense with a bunch of great athletes and you fall short because you just don't have enough guys to get enough innings, that's going to be on you. Perry Manassian.
Why does he have the hardest name?
Perry Manassian.
He is like the hardest name for a GM to say.
His dad was the Rangers clubhouse guy,
correct.
Right?
That's correct.
Perry Manassian.
They're off to a great
start.
Now,
he's not an analytics guy. You know, he's kind of an old school scouts guy.
Yes, exactly.
But
although he's not old. He's only in his early 40s, I believe.
But at some point, you know, that's a thing that comes down for everybody. It's like you still got to get 27 outs every single game. How are you going to get those outs? How are you getting these outs?
Can't build off the Rays model of using 1,000 relievers because the Angels don't have 1,000 relievers. Now, they did draft 20 pitchers last year in the draft, but none of them are ready, although Silseth did pitch really well for them in his debut.
Can you imagine? I mean, you think the A's have had a rough start. Can you imagine how bad it would be if the A's didn't have pitching?
Oh my God. Are we talking about Reds, Detroit bad? Or because neither of those teams can score. Oh, actually, the Reds can score. They can't do anything
else. The only two teams that have scored less than the A's are the Orioles and the Tigers.
Yeah.
Those are the only two teams. And it's hard to believe watching one run or less for 15 games this season, it's hard to believe anyone has scored less than the A's. But then the A's just did beat the Orioles 4 out of 5. I mean, the Tigers 4 out of 5. But that's hard to believe. But, all right, let's see. Can you win a division when you're getting basically
– nothing from your starters.
No innings.
Not nothing, but
– no, you're not. I mean, that's not – if you say, well, I got 140 really – that's not – and then you'll say, okay, you keep trying to tell me how valuable Ohtani is as a pitcher. I know what his value is as a hitter. He's incredible. His value as a pitcher, once every 6 days, and he doesn't give you a lot of innings, and you don't make the playoffs, and he doesn't pitch in the postseason, I don't know how valuable he is.
I agree. If he's not going to go 165 as your ace, well, I mean, what are we doing? I mean, Corbin Burns won at least 165 last year, won the Cy Young. Can Ohtani get to – can he get to there? Can any other guys get there? It's a big question, and
figure out how many outs it is for a season?
It's like 4,000 something, I thought.
I mean, it's a lot of outs you got to get in a year. How do you get all those outs for 6 months? I don't know. And you know who also had no clue how they're going to do it? That would be their color analyst, Mark Gubazal, the one-time All-Star and world champion. When we asked him, he goes, I don't know how they're going to – I have no idea how they're going to do it.
4,374 outs.
You got to get – not counting extra innings.
Yes, that's
– you've got to get 4,374 outs?
Yes.
How are they going to do that?
I don't know, but quickly – We're going to be live streaming Cole Irvin's start in Stockton, so we'll see how long that game goes. And
can we – I was joking.
I have an Alex Jensen MILB account that I can log into if they have the game via video. If not, we'll tune in and listen to the great Alex Jensen call the game.
Yeah, I was joking with Cole going, you know, is this going to be one of those like you're like halfway through your motion and it starts to – you know, because the internet connection sucks.
Buffering.
And then like all of a sudden the ball's back to him and we don't even see what it was.
One last one. Big series starts tomorrow. I'm canceling all my plans tomorrow. I'm taking the day off. Dubs, Mavericks.
Oh, I won't eat. The Warriors are playing. I can't even. I won't even be able to get my kids to school.
Is Joe Hughes or Alex? Or is Joe Hughes or Roxy available tomorrow for you?
I can't even call one of them. I'm like paralyzed because the Warriors are playing.
Are the Warriors going to go to the NBA Finals?
How would they not?
Taking Dallas in 7.
Well, you know what happens when you take someone in 7?
They win in 6.
Means you really don't know.
No, I think
you know that, right?
I think Dallas is going to
like
win.
All the cowards on TV. Oh, this is going to be great series. I take so and so in 7. If you say 7, that's just chalk.
Yep.
You're not giving me a real opinion is 5 or 6.
I think my favorite
7. You're spitball.
I think my favorite thing I heard so far was,
don't make me go back into Talk Show Townsend. I'll go back into that mode.
I think my favorite,
start calling you people out.
I think my favorite thing,
and I
heard,
do mean you people.
I think my favorite thing I heard so far was, the only reason the Mavs moved on to play the Dubs is because they didn't have to play the Dubs yet. Okay. All
yeah,
right.
That's true.
Yeah. No, they played the number one team in the NBA playoffs, and they won.
You know why Michael Jordan and the Bulls are not the greatest team of all time?
Because they didn't play each other.
They didn't play the Dubs. Yeah. Why did? How about the 1986 Boston Celtics, who went 40-1 at home? You know who they didn't play?
The Dubs. Or Greg Popovich's Spurs.
Yeah, I didn't play the Dubs.
Yeah, that's true.
Shaq and Kobe play the Dubs?
No. What's Warriors? Are we talking about the championship Warriors or the Warriors won 73 games and lost in the finals?
Either one. They're still the Dubs.
That's it.
Bill Russell won 11. How many did
Russell won 11.
Won 11. Did he ever play the Dubs?
He did not.
Yeah.
You're talking about the USF's own Bill Russell.
He didn't play the
Oakland's
Dubs.
Oakland's own.
Showtime Lakers ever play the Dubs?
They did not. They played the Sixers and they won their first title.
They didn't play the
Dr. J was getting old.
And Magic Johnson, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, James Worthy, Byron Scott, Michael Cooper. They didn't play the Dubs.
Yeah, they didn't. That's a
Kurt Rambis.
We don't compare eras. We don't compare eras. Santa Clara.
There you go.
All right, that's it.
Enough of the Dub talk.
Yeah, enough of everything. Time to go.
Can you imagine how crushed people are going to be if they lose?
Yes, I can. That's why I'm picking Dallas.
There are people, I can't even go to the Pearl Jam concert because the Dubs.
Yeah, yeah.
I think I'm going to the Pearl Jam concert than a
apparently, Eddie Vedder put on an A's batting helmet at the end of the show, too.
Uh-oh, the Orlando Magic get the number one pick.
Yeah, all right, that's it. I'm done.
Nobody cares.
By the way, shout out to Jesse Goldberg Strassler. He's our voice of the Lansing Lugnuts. He's listening to us right now.
He's a Dubs fan?
Must be if he's listening.
He's listening to the Dubs?
Yeah.
If I have to hear Dubs again, I miss God.
All right.
And you notice everybody's a nation now.
Yeah, it's true.
Who is the first nation?
Steeler Nation.
No.
Raider Nation.
It was Raider Nation, my friend. Yeah. Don't ever forget that. We want to thank everybody who came on the program. I'm sorry we're out of time, but we go ahead. Thank them.
Sonny Gray, Frankie Montas, and Corey Provis, the radio voice of the Twins.
Boom. We'll see you in 10 minutes with A's Total Access, brought to you by
Chevron.
Thank you, everybody, for listening.
The Coliseum has gone by many names, but none better than the Last Dive Bar. Hi, everyone. Ken Korak here, and my friends at Last Dive Bar are helping us celebrate our longtime home. Last Dive Bar has the most unique merchandise for all Oakland baseball fans. T-shirts, sweatshirts, the Ray Fox line, and my personal favorite, the lights have taken full effect. Visit their website at lastdivebar.com or follow them on social media at lastdivebar. All proceeds are invested back into local Bay Area charities. Go to lastdivebar.com. That's lastdivebar.com.
This has been a presentation of the Oakland Athletics.